We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello everybody, greetings. You join me at the Last Drop Hotel in Bromley, wherever I am. It's up near, not Bromley Common, not in the south, I'm up north. This is actually, hang on, let me look at the thing. I am at Bromley Cross, which is on the way to Clitheroe. I'm supporting Clinton Baptiste on his tour in a minute. So I'm at the Darwin Theatre tonight. And then we're in Halifax tomorrow. And then where are we after that? Oh, yeah, and then we're in the Lowry in Manchester, in Salford, on Sunday. So if you're around, come down, come see us. Before we get into it, we've got to do our little things, got to do our bit of housekeeping. So we're sticking a toe in the YouTube, in the YouTube. That's what he says here.
I wrote in such a hurry. I think we've decided that YouTube might catch on, so we're going to have a go at it.
Yeah, producer Paul seems to think there's something in this YouTube malarkey.
I'm probably going to be
so, wrong. So we'll see, shall we? We'll see. Getting ahead of the curve. I'm going to read this, what you said. I'm going to do that. And so here are. So we're sticking a toe in the YouTube, which sounds bizarre. But we need you all to subscribe, to tickle the algorithms and make it happen. So click the link in the episode description to see us recording some of the episodes, including our amazing chat with Sex Pistols star Glenn Matlock. So come and do that. Actually, yeah, do that for us. That'd be fantastic. It's one of those things. We're a bit behind with it. So get onto the YouTube channel. Come and have a look. There's some good stuff. Also, this podcast is being supported by Save Our Souls Clothing. Mark and Stacey, those wonderful lads, doing wonderful things with their ethically sourced and vegan-friendly garms. And they're our sponsors. And so, if you go to their website, sosclothing.co.uk/membrane, and use the promo code membrane, that's all one word, you'll get 15% off. Not just of our stylish T-shirts and hoodies, you'll also get 50% off of their entire range on the entire store. So go to sosclothing.co.uk/membrane, use the exclusive listener code membrane, and you'll get 15% off the entire store. So go and do that. They're good lads as well. Just briefly, while we mention them, they've had a bit of a tough time this week because a year ago they lost their mate Dean. Bless them. And I just saw two lads coming together like proper mates, looking out for each other, making sure Dean's family were well. Everyone sort of came together. It was a beautiful thing. So if you're listening to this, lads, nothing but love for you. Yeah, I know it's a tricky time for you, but you know, you're good lads. You know, and I'm glad you're there for each other. And it's a pleasure to have you as our sponsors. God bless you. We've also got limited edition Insane in the Membrane coffee beans, a roast made to our taste by Wogan Coffee in Bristol. Yeah, we love Bristol. If you go to wogancoffee.com and use the exclusive Membrane listener promo code Membrane, you'll get 10% off Insane in the Membrane beans. I can't say the word beans without laughing.
It sounded all right when I wrote it. It sounded okay, but now you've said it.
It's like just because beans sounds means different wrong. Things. Yeah. Beans, just be, come get your Insane in the Membrane beans. Well, I'm in a hotel on my own. There's probably plenty of beans around here. But yeah, go to wogancoffee.com, use the exclusive Membrane listener promo code Membrane for 10% off the Insane in the Membrane coffee beans. I can't laugh at coffee, but they are. Thank you, Wogan Coffee. You know what? It is really nice coffee. I urge you to go and get some because it's really nice. I think you coffee connoisseurs out there really need to get your head around that. It's really good stuff. So, this week's guest is David Firth. David Firth is the creator of one of my favourite cartoon characters, Salad Fingers. I can't remember who first showed me Salad Fingers. It was years ago. And I just couldn't believe what I was watching. And I've loved Salad Fingers ever since. He's also a creator, they created Devo, another character that I really loved. I think my youngest son, Bailey, introduced me to. Really funny. And he was doing a little tour. He was going on tour, having a bit of a chat with people, talking about Salad Fingers and that. And I just thought, do you know what? I'd love to get him on. So we had him on. And it was a really good chat. Now, I will say, it goes a little bit surreal by the end. We go off on a bit of a tangent. So do stick around for that. It's a really good chat. He's a smashing dude, and it was a pleasure to have him on. So coming up in a minute is David Firth.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Insane in the Membrane.
Cheers for coming on, because I've been a big fan of your work. Salad Fingers and Devo, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having
nice
me.
One. Ah, that's my pleasure, man. So it's mental health, but it's not. I know some people get put off with that. They're kind of, you know, when you go, it's a mental health podcast. That's kind of like the jumping off point. But it kind of goes wherever you want it to go. It's just, you know, just have it. It's two people having a chat. That's all it is. And from that, like people listening will know, will take from it what they will. So, you know, you're just telling your story, really, just talking about things. And, you know, have you found it difficult over the last couple of years, over the year or so with the lockdowns and that? Or did you kind of do stuff from home anyway, like work-wise?
Yeah, it's not really changed much for me. You know, certain personal things have been a problem, but work-wise, yeah, there's been no problem at all. It's been better than usual, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Also, you know, if I'm restricted to my house, then I can get more work done. And, you know, if there's no pressure to be out of the house, then that's, for me, that's good. That's just getting more done, really.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It was a funny one with the... Because you didn't need to be anywhere. I actually felt all right about it. I felt, you know, that was actually, you know, it wasn't great. Obviously, you know, as it went on, I started to struggle with it a bit, but initially I was like, oh, I don't have to be anywhere. That's quite nice. I can just do stuff.
Yeah, I think initially the start of it was the worst part for me, because I thought, you know, there was some horrible virus that was going to kill me. But, you know, now I realise there isn't. And, you know, it might make me sick, but I'm vaccinated. And at first I had this really horrible feeling that this was it. You know, this was the end of times.
Did you really?
Yeah, just for a while. You know, washing my hands all the time, even like going to when you got back from the supermarket, kind of making sure that I was like washing the containers of things that other people might have touched. I'm glad that bit's over. Then after that, I've just been quite relaxed.
It's funny, actually, because I know going out and getting shopping, because where I was living in this flat, it was sort of overlooked by other flats. So we could see clearly into their lounges and they could see clearly into our kitchen. So, I know what you mean. Because of the news, because we were watching the news all the time, you start to build up this weird idea that we're getting into this like zombie apocalypse type affair. And I remember coming in one day with all the bags of shopping, and I put them on the table in the kitchen, and I shut the blinds so the people in the other flats couldn't see what I'd bought.
Yeah.
It was like, in case they came around to rob it.
All right, yeah.
I had a real, really weird week.
Yeah, buying huge bags of rice and stuff just in case, you know, something that's going to last. Like, oh, what if food runs out? What if you know, there's no food? I'm going to have something to eat. I'll buy some big bags of rice and pasta, stuff that's going to last for a while.
Yeah, that's it. And then you end up with acres of rice. You just go, but the thing is, you know, looking at salad fingers and... He lives in a desolate place. So obviously that's on you're sort of aware of what could happen if society was to just stop. We don't end up like salad fingers.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's sort of living on, you know, he doesn't have a lot of needs. He just finds, I don't know exactly why he's ended up the way he has. I haven't decided on that yet, or... You know, it hasn't come to me, but people have got ideas, think it's about a war or something. But, you know, I just think it might be by choice. He might just have wandered off somewhere and he might be happier living away from everything. But there might be nothing else. You know, I don't picture there being a big city nearby, Salad Fingers World. I feel like he's in a pretty isolated place, but I'm not sure if he's... I think he's probably by choice.
Yeah. What I like about things like Salad Fingers and things like films like Napoleon Dynamite and that, is that they just exist. They're just, like you've just said, there doesn't have to be a reason why they are where they are.
Yeah.
They just are. And I really like that. But for some reason, other people need to put it somewhere and need to be, you know, like, well, why can't it just be that? Why can't it just, like, just exist in that little, that thing exists there.
Yeah, you know? That's it. And... Well, it's always, for me, you know, I've always been a fan of sort of surreal humour, whereas I think if you didn't grow up watching Reeves and Mortimer and Monty Python and Big Train and stuff like that, then you probably would need a little bit of explanation. Like, I find American people often feel the need to justify and explain all these jokes. And even if there was something as weird as, you know, Reeves and Mortimer on TV now, there would be videos explaining each joke. You just know it.
Yeah.
Whereas we just kind of enjoyed the fact that they didn't make sense. That was the joke a lot of the time.
That was exactly it. That's why, that is exactly it. I remember just sitting there. Down the years, there's been things like that. So absolutely, Big Train, as you said, Nathan Barley, all these things. Was it Jam, Blue Jam or whatever?
Yeah, both.
Yeah, and you're watching these things, and it's nothing better. I know I'm watching something great when I sit there going, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
What is happening? It just really makes me laugh. So when I was first showed Salad Fingers, I just remember just sitting there going, I can't fucking believe that this exists. This is incredible. And you know your true friends are when you show them, and they either go, oh, wow, this is it. This is fantastic. Or they go, you're weird. You watch some weird shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, if it existed before, then I would have been a fan of it. I always think that, you know, I've got to make something that I would want to see. And if it already exists, I don't need to make it. But if there's a gap in the market, especially in the animation world, I'm sure things similarly exist in film, but animation specifically, I always felt like there was a gap for sort of slightly, for me, ambient and comforting horror. It's not horror that makes you constantly feel anxious. There is warmth in the horror. And that's always what I kind of went for. Like, I felt like films like Saw for me are a bit too cold. There's no warmth in the horror there. There's nothing in between the horribleness that makes me, you know, appreciate the film itself. It's just you know, straight up torture, isn't it, all the way through? And a lot of horror films are like that, I think. Whereas things like, I don't know, The Mist. I always find that quite comforting. You know, that, have you seen that, films like The Mist?
Yeah,
and I think that's why people like Stranger Things as well. I think it's kind of nice between the horror parts, isn't it? There's a comfort there, and I think that's, I often think that's missing from horror.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That comfortable horror, like you just said. Yeah, that is exactly what it is. I'd never thought of that before. It's like, why do I like that? It's like with Salad Fingers, there's elements of, like, it was the market and he was selling really weird stuff, and then there was a bit where Crow stole his wares, and then he was so sad. And then he went, oh, that's right, I've got some more, and just started peeling himself.
Yeah. I think he's, you know, he's been dealing with those crows a lot. He knows there's nothing he can do. They can fly and they can move pretty quickly. So he just has to deal with it like a pest. They're his only real, you know, enemy, I think, throughout the series. I mean, he comes across different beings that come and go, but his only persistent enemy, I think, is crows.
Yeah. You've been asked this a million times. When you first came up with it and you showed it to the first person, or did you come up with it with somebody? Or did you take it to someone and go, I've got this?
My friend Christian called me Salad Fingers. He called me that before the series. He was commenting on my fingers, the shape of my fingers. And so when I said I wanted to use that name for a cartoon, we both had a discussion about how it should be. And and then I went off and made it. Like, it's because when you're making cartoons that no one's watching, which I was at the time, then you don't overthink it. It's just, I need to make something. I'm bored. I want to make something. It's just like now, if I went and did a drawing, I wouldn't be like, this drawing's going to be, you know, worth something. I just do it because it's enjoyable. So I didn't think too much about it. But I remember when I finished it, the first person I showed it to was my flatmate from university, even though I was at home. And the reason that he was the only first person I'd showed it to was because it was 3 a.m. or something, and he was the only person. He was always online, you know, on MSN Messenger. Yeah. It was. He was always online, so I was like, I'll show it to Rob. And got positive feedback. But that was it. Like, the idea was, next day I'll put it on Newgrounds and then we'll find out if it's any good or not.
Yeah.
And for the first 5 days, it was typical feedback. You know, this is weird. Stop doing this. It didn't take off. Didn't have a very good score on Newgrounds either, because things were rated by score. So if you were, you know, 4.5 out of 5 plus, then you were going to be in a good position and you were going to be visible. But I had like 2 out of 5. Most people didn't like it. I thought there's no hope of this taking off. And I'd forgotten about it. By 4 or 5 days, I was just like, right, what's next? Because this is nothing. And then all of a sudden it got stuck on the front page of Newgrounds, and like then it took in, you know, tens of thousands of hits.
Yeah.
Every hour, and I was just absolutely, I couldn't believe it. Then the score started going up. Then the score started creeping up on Newgrounds. It's like people really needed to be told they were allowed to like it.
Well, it was so unusual, and it's sort of like it just came out of nowhere. Just, you know, like, that's the beauty of the internet. You can just put things up. And it just, all you need is that one person to go, have you fucking seen this?
Yeah.
And then it spreads.
Well, I didn't like what I saw on Newgrounds for the most part. I thought everyone else must have been thinking like me. There's enough of these video game parodies. There's enough of this like kind of cartoony, cheesy sort of childish humour. Surely people will appreciate the originality if I put something a bit surreal up. And at first, people really didn't. And I thought, I was naive enough to think that other people thought like me at the time. And then I kind of realised it was very niche, but it managed to reach those people. There are some things people can put out and it will just spread amongst everyone immediately. Yeah. And maybe not reach people on a deeper level, but you know, very shareable stuff. And I was competing with that really, because my, you know, up until that point, my stuff was just dark and weird and no one seemed to like it. So,
yeah,
I think, yeah, at first I was, it was the one before it that I put out, were called Scribbler. And I was just thinking, well, I've made something that I've purposefully tried to not look like a Flash cartoon, because I felt like that was getting stale at the time, that same Flash look. And I thought, people will surely appreciate this, and they didn't. So I think it was the first dose of realizing that people's tastes aren't like my tastes.
Have you always been that way? Have you always felt a bit different to other people? People must assume that because you've come up with a character like that, you must be weird and dark and, you know, sitting in a well somewhere coming up with your new ideas.
I think I'm not a weird person. I just have tastes that I just find the majority of the kind of stuff that seems to be shoveled, you know, towards me through algorithms and recommendation, especially comedy stuff, because I've always been a bit picky about comedy. I just think, I've always thought, can't we do better than this? It seems like people retell the same joke over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And the same jokes, the same humour, the same satire. And so I've always been very picky when it's come to humour. Yeah, like stuff like Chris Morris, that was always just... Again, I always thought, why isn't more stuff like this? Why do most people just go for this sort of low-hanging fruit kind of gags? And why can't there be more people like Chris Morris? And I think, the same attitude towards films and music and everything. I'm just very, very picky about what I like, I think.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I love, I think it's on the DVD for Jam, and it says play all at once. And then when you press play all at once, it just goes, why? And it used to really make me laugh. And I show people and they go, right? I go, don't you think that's fucking hilarious? And they go, no. And
I don't think I ever clicked that.
So it just really made me laugh. And just, and like, I've had partners, ex-partners, and they're going, you read weird shit. You watch weird stuff. And then they think, oh, I'm weird. I'm like, no, I just find that's what I find funny. I don't find mainstream stuff funny. And then you've got the other side of it where people try and copy people like Reeves and Mortimer, and they try and be weird and wonderful and surreal. And you go, if you're not like that, that's not going to come across. It's going to sound false.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially when they, they copy Reeves and Mortimer and they get more popular, Beau Selector. I always thought that always kind of annoyed me a little bit. I did like Beau Selector in places, but certain ones of their characters, I thought that's just Reeves and Mortimer. That's just a diluted Reeves and Mortimer. And they didn't get, you know, they were always niche. How did you get mainstream? I think people want to feel... You know, they've got a bunch of feelings they want to have, they want to get from their entertainment. And, you know, they listen to a sad song, they might feel sad. They listen to a happy song, feel happy. But to me, there's another category, which is listen to a weird song, feel weird. Or watch a weird film, feel weird. And I think a lot of people don't want to feel weird. But no. I do. I'm really interested in that feeling. What is that feeling? And it doesn't instantly give you that serotonin hit like a lot of feel good stuff does, but I'm always thinking about it later. And I remember the first time I watched a David Lynch film, I don't think I even enjoyed it, but I kept on thinking about it all the time. And then I wanted to go back and then embraced that feeling, because the first experience of that weird feeling was actually rejection. But eventually I came around to it. And maybe that's the reason stuff like mine doesn't really catch on straight away.
Yeah, you come back to it.
Unless people have been given permission. Like, you know, like if an album, if you know, if people say an album's 10 out of 10, you listen to it straight away, you think this doesn't sound very good at all. You listen to it a few more times just because you want to find that 10 out of 10 that they've experienced. But, you know, without someone telling you that it's a 10 out of 10 album, then you might just kind of listen to it once and then never listen to it again because, you know, it's not immediate.
I know what you mean. And I think maybe the problem comes from, like, society tells you, this is what you should be listening to. This is what you shouldn't be listening to. And you're not allowed to sort of make your own choices. It's like, this is good, this is bad. It's like you see the top 100 albums of all time, top 100 albums you should listen to before you die. And most of them, you go, it's all right. You know, it's what it is, but it's not my favorite album.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the same goes for a lot of really weird albums as well. I can guarantee you at least 60% of the people who own Trout Mask Replica probably don't enjoy it. They have it because they're told that it's a masterpiece. I think it's great, but I don't think it's... I don't put it on and go, yeah, Trout Mask Replica. I appreciate how weird it is. I do like a lot of Captain Beefheart. I like some of the stuff he did after that, actually, more. But I think a lot of people have seen that on Pitchfork lists and the Observer's top 100 or whatever, and they go, yeah, I need to listen to that and I need to like it because I'm cultured. Whereas I don't think most people that listen to that album enjoy it.
I've never come away from listening to it going, yeah, well done. I'm glad
you never get it. You never sat there going, yeah, I got that rhythm stuck in my head. I mean, it's like, like, I'm really glad people talk about it all the time because he's very eccentric and weird and very original. But yeah, I don't think people really enjoy it.
I went to see the Magic Band. I saw them at, I can't remember, it was Shepherd's Bush Empire or something like that. So it was the band and I think the drummer was taking over singing duties. And I remember, I'm watching them and I was like, I'm really glad I'm watching this. But you get into a groove, you go, oh, I really like this bit. And then they go off into like this, they take a left turn and you go, oh, I was enjoying that. What the fuck is this now? It's like they were, I don't know, it's like they were banging two metal bathtubs together. And you're going like, what? Oh, I really like the jazzy bit you just did. But then that's why, and I came away going, like listening to the album, like, I'm glad I went and I'm glad I saw them, but I wouldn't rush to see them again. That was a nice moment.
But I think it's the same. I think it doesn't give you that comforting hit of serotonin that, you know, seeing a band that play really catchy, sort of, you know, very listenable music play. But you might remember it. It might make you think. But I think it's the same, like I was explaining with the David Lynch sort of thing. I wasn't in a hurry to like it. But it definitely made me feel something. And maybe that's it. Maybe Trout Mask Replica makes people feel something that they haven't felt with other albums. But I haven't really felt it with that album. No. I'm not saying... But what I think, though, is people are given permission to think it's a masterpiece and then they have to try and find that masterpiece in there. And,
yes. Well, it's like, Charles Bukowski, I think, said... If you see the crowd running one way, just run the other way.
Yeah.
And I really like that. And it's true. There are so many things that whenever anyone, they start raving about TV shows and films and they're like, have you seen that? You seen it? And everyone's talking about it online. And then I just go, I'm not on purpose. I don't set out to do this, but I just go, well, I'll get to it at some point, but I'm not going to watch it just because you lot have said. I should watch it. And 9 times out of 10, I'm like, yeah, it was all right. It wasn't for me, but, you know, it's quite, as you said, I'm like, well, this has been done before. And that's what it is. It's that comfort that people like, isn't it? That It's something they recognise, makes them feel good because it's similar to what they felt before when they watched the other thing that was like that.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame that people want to live like that, you know? Get out, like that phrase, get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, and but on the opposite of that, you could be going through life pretending you like something that you don't really like just because you want to be against the crowd, and I think that happens quite a lot as well. So who knows, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I think there is. I've met a few contrarians,
yeah. Yeah, these, you know, there'll be people who are drinking, like, really weird, obscure sort of craft ales that are about 11%, and you have a little sip of it and you go, ah, God, it tastes like burnt vinegar or something, but they're drinking it. They go, no, this is really good. This is great.
I know. I do that. Every time I'm with certain people, they try to make me drink whiskey. And I've told them 1,000 times, I don't drink whiskey. I can't drink it. I don't want to drink it. And they're always, you're not doing it right. You're not doing it right. A Silky does it to me. And I'm like, but I am doing it. I put it in my mouth and I'm swallowing it and it tastes horrible. Yeah. Can you pack it in?
I'd come to the conclusion that all alcohol tastes horrible. And actually, most of it doesn't feel good either to me. But if I do, you know, I would rather have whiskey than beer, because then I know there's only that much liquid in my body and not like that much. And I don't want that much liquid in my sloshing around my body.
This is the problem. This is why my body's like it is at the minute, because I've been drinking too much. Well, I just keep meeting up with people and go, do you want a pint? They go, yeah, go on then.
I would if I could enjoy it. Like if beer, I always think my body does not, it was not built to enjoy alcohol, because usually, I'd say 9 times out of 10, it just makes me feel like crap immediately. So
yeah,
if I liked it, I would do it. But when I say I don't drink, for the most part, I'm not trying to prove how how good I'm being, what great willpower I've got. There's no will. I don't have any urge to do it. That's why. I'd like to.
You seem like someone. You seem like someone that sort of walks their own path. You do what you want to do, and you know you won't be. And not in a. And I'm not saying in a. That's not in a shitty way. You're just like, look, I want to do this, and that's what I'm going to do. So.
Well, I think if I like it, I think it's good that I don't like alcohol that much, because if I did, then I'd probably drink every day, all day.
Yeah.
You know, why not? It'd be, if I like it, why not? I just do it all the time.
But you're big on your music as well, aren't you? I was looking at that. Yeah. Locust Toy Box.
Yeah, that's me.
That's you. And I was looking at that. Do you find, because I love music, I love all kinds of music. I'm not a snob. It's like if I like it, I like it. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
And I find it does help. I find music helps my mental health more than comedy does. I find if I'm struggling with the day, or things are coming on top a little bit, I will go off and stick some music on. And then I'm like, that's better. I don't know if that's the same with you, if you find it quite therapeutic.
If I'm having a really bad day, I don't listen to anything. I listen to music when I'm happy, I think, more so than when I'm actually in a good mood. I'll be like, oh yeah, now I want to hear music. When I'm in a bad mood, I guess maybe I'll try, but usually, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I've got this, I feel like my brain's, you know, enjoyment tap, you know, the endorphins and that in there. I think it just goes off for times, and it's just, there's nothing, there's no, it's just an empty sort of void. And then when it comes on, then I'm just like, music. I'll find some music now. Maybe I can make music, you know. I don't think I can make music when that's not open, that tap's not on. So whereas I can make my other stuff, where whatever, I can just, it just kind of drips out slowly. But I can only really make music when there's a certain configuration going on up there.
Mm. Yeah. Do you have to sit down when do you go, right, today I'm going to do some work. I'm going to work on this thing. Or does it just come naturally to you? It's kind of like you enjoy it, so you just do it and it's good fun. And
yeah, it's kind of like
sort of push yourself.
It's like a jigsaw, I guess. If it's on a table downstairs. I don't really do jigsaws. I don't know. I don't know how long they take. But imagine you got a jigsaw and you'd already started it and left it where it was. You know, sit drinking your coffee and put a few pieces in the jigsaw, you know. But or I might be in a really big good mood and get half of it done or something. But generally, it's just a process. It just continue where I was, pick up where I left off. There's always something to work on. There's always something to scribble away at. And I never pressure myself to finish anything, even a single idea, even a single sentence of dialogue. I don't pressure myself to finish that in one go, because I feel like if you do that, then you might end up with something where you're trying to take a shortcut to a result. And the answer will come. It always comes. So sometimes you just got to wait. But a lot of the time, it is just processes that I'm carrying out. When I write a script, then it's going to have to be storyboarded. Then when I storyboard it, then I animate it. And it's most of the time, it doesn't require any like extreme levels of thinking. It's just bit by bit.
Yeah, right. Do you find that your mental health is pretty all right? Like you're kind of like pretty even most of the time, or do you have days where you're just like, oh fuck, what's the point? Like you were saying earlier about when the first lockdown happened and you thought that was going to be it. You know, do you have many days like that where you're just like, fuck, God, this is awful? I've stopped watching the news now because I don't need to know what's going on.
I don't think about it really. I don't use the phrase mental health. I don't think about anxiety or anything like that. I just, I can almost guarantee that if I'm feeling like crap one day, it's because of whatever I did or didn't put in my body the previous day. Whether that be too much sugar, not enough, fiber or alcohol or anything else. I don't drink alcohol, but you know what I mean. Just it's always what I did or didn't do yesterday. Maybe I stared at a screen too much the previous day. I feel it's more of a physical feeling, and that kind of affects everything else. But so I kind of have worked out exactly at this age what's going to trigger a bad day, and I'd say almost always is sugar. That's it. That's the main thing. If I drink a bunch of cola or something in one day, I do have a problem with sugar. It gives me a very short term boost of happiness. And if I'm working on something as well, and maybe I'm not getting a lot done, I just instinctively go for the sugar and try and speed my brain up, make my brain work better, and then the next day is not going to be good. But I just try and work out exactly what I need, how much exercise, how much fresh air, how much light, all these things that I need. And if that's all in balance, then things are pretty good, I think.
You know what? It's interesting you say that about looking at the screen too much and not getting out. Like, in the lockdowns, I ended up walking for miles. I just go off, and if anywhere was open, I could get a coffee, and then I'd just walk. And I used to go out for hours just walking. And there were so many people I knew that weren't doing that, and they were like, and they were starting to really struggle. And I'm like, just go out, put your headphones on, and go out, go and do something else, because people don't realise that doing this all day, your brain just, because your brain can't differentiate between, reality and this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't understand why people don't just go for walks as well. If they're physically able to walk to something, you don't need to walk anywhere. There doesn't need to be a destination. Just walk, see some trees, see some grass. That's light is very important. There's so many, I know people who get up, in the sort of late afternoon, go to bed at 7 a.m. or something, and they're sad, and they should realize that's the reason. You gotta, I'll be sad if I'm going to bed at 6 a.m. and waking up at 3 in the afternoon. That's because you wake up and the day's ending and it's getting dark, and that's not going to work. Yeah. So it's quite obvious a lot of time why why I'm feeling down. If I'm feeling down, it's usually my fault. It's not just something that's, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who just get whatever they do, however well they do it, you know, however well they take care of themselves, they just get struck with the sort of dark feelings or whatever. I don't really get that. It's always my fault.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm the same. If I've overindulged for some reason, it's food at the minute, and I'm every time I go and do something, I'm like, oh, I'm going to grab a sandwich while I do that. Oh, I'm going to grab that thing while I do that. Yeah. And all of a sudden I realize I'm like, I'm eating all day. It's just, and I need to break that cycle now. But like I say, yeah, it is. It's always my fault. Again, like you said.
Yeah. I used to buy too much sugary stuff, and then I just thought, well, if I don't buy it, then I'm not going to eat it, am I? So now there's very little to eat in my house that is sugary. So it'll be, if I'm going to eat, then it's going to be savoury. And if it's going to be savoury, then I'm going to have to make a meal. Am I hungry enough for that? So that's the way it works for me. If I fill my cupboard with biscuits, then those biscuits are going to be eaten, perhaps in a single day.
I know. I didn't realise that Jaffa cakes, like, you could just stop eating them. Like, yeah. You don't have to have the whole sleeve in one go.
They don't go dry though, don't they? You know, you don't want a dry Jaffa cake.
You don't want that.
I can't have dairy, but you know, Polish Jaffa cakes, there's this Polish brand of Jaffa cakes that are dairy free, and they're raspberry Jaffa cakes. So those are quite,
oh, wow.
When you have to go dairy free, your cake and biscuit options narrow down quite a lot. But then for some reason you think, oh, this is a good thing, I'll eat less. You don't. You just eat more of those things. Like,
yeah,
those few things that are dairy free, you just like, they're the best. And you just, so yeah.
And yeah, chow down.
Polish raspberry Jaffa cakes. You've got to stop eating those things. They're so good.
When did you, what happened to make you realise you were, sort of, was it a lactose thing or just dairy thing?
Yeah, that's a lockdown development, that is, for me. Also, I found a lot of people, other people have been saying that they've suddenly realised they're lactose intolerant or dairy intolerant, and it starts my conspiracy brain going. It's going, well, everyone says that the biggest problem with the emissions is actually dairy production, and all of a sudden everyone's gone dairy free. What are they putting in the dairy? Are they poisoning the dairy? It starts my conspiracy brain going, how come everyone all of a sudden is lactose intolerant? Are they putting something in the dairy? I don't know. I think I've just been avoiding it, the inevitable, for many years now, and it gets to a point where you stop, like, taking that chance and saying, you know, yeah, I'll have a chocolate bar, and then the next day something either happens too quickly or doesn't happen at all, and in my case doesn't happen at all, and I hate that. So just kind of had to give it up. The only thing I miss is pizza.
Okay, right.
Chocolate's fine. Dark chocolate's just as good, better in some cases. A glass of milk, it's fine. You know, oat milk in coffee's good.
Yeah.
But cheddar cheese and pizza are irreplaceable. And, you know.
I know what you mean. I had a vegan pizza the other week and it actually was all right. It was that, because I've started this, I'm on a veggie thing now, because I don't know, meat just, suddenly one day meat just made me feel weird to eat it.
Yeah.
And I was like, why am I eating this? Am I enjoying this still? I don't really know. It's weird. And I had a vegan pizza at this pub, the Star of the East in Limehouse.
Yeah.
And it was good. It had vegan cheese on it. It was great.
Right,
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, I had one from one of the pizza chains, the less crappy of the main ones. I don't want to say any brands on here, but you know, it's there's right. But it definitely wasn't Domino's, because I hate Domino's. There you go.
Fuck Domino's.
Yeah, that's the worst. But I've had a couple of decent ones, but they never give you that. I mean, they're all right. I've never had a really good one, but you know, until they can, I mean, we've been, how long have humans been making cheese? It must have been hundreds of years, maybe 1,000 years. I bet someone was making cheese 1,000 years ago, right? And we've only been making vegan cheese for like 10 or 15 years. So I reckon, give it a few more years, they'll get it, like, it'll be not indistinguishable from cheddar at one point. Even if they have to 3D print it, like, you know, One day, right? Because, you know, 3D printers, they print, you know, plastic and stuff like that. They do that. Mm. It takes a while. But, you know, quantum computers, they can do all the calculations a lot quicker. They'll be able to work out exactly the chemical, you know, right down to the molecules, exactly what makes cheddar taste the way it does. And then they'll move one of them so that, you know, that'll circumvent the dairy. You can somehow get around this dairy inclusion, and then they'll be able to make it taste exactly the same. You'll be able to print it at home, I reckon.
Imagine that.
Yeah. I reckon that's coming. There'll be a machine where you print your own dairy-free cheese at home with a quantum computer.
A cheese printer.
Yeah, you know what? Someone record this, because in 2076, when that's a reality, someone will be like, a guy on a podcast, you know, predicted that.
Yeah.
Print your own cheese, and there'll be no dairy cheese in that, and they'll be living on Saturn or something. Maybe not that. I reckon, though, some sort of off-world, you know, city. You know, they've got the space station, aren't they? It's kind of going around in orbit. I reckon it's going to be bigger. I bet Jeff Bezos has been talking about getting production of stuff off of Earth and into orbit. I don't know how far they're going to go, but I reckon at that point they might be in low orbit, you know, Earth's orbit, printing their own vegan cheese with a quantum computer.
Quote me. He's probably going to go for like a Death Star kind of affair.
Yeah.
Like build his own planet.
I reckon.
You'll be flying out towards it, and they'll do that thing. They say, what's that? Is that a moon? You go, that's no moon. And as it turns around, it's actually Jeff Bezos's head.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I mean, I'm really excited by technological advancements. I really want to see some new ones. But, you know, when they send stuff into Earth's orbit, satellites, can they send something to Sun's orbit? And I'm surely they can. I'm just thinking, can Jeff Bezos make his own planet?
Do you know what? If he's listening, I'm sure
he is.
Well, I've got a mate, actually, my mate Geordie. And Geordie works for the basically Space Force. Like, they put satellites into space. So he's very knowledgeable about these things. So, Geordie, if you're listening, drop me a message, Geordie.
Yeah, well, I just want to know what's required to make a Death Star, and would it have to orbit the Sun, or could it orbit Earth, or could it just be the Moon?
No.
I know they can, because they fire things into Earth's orbit by shooting them at a certain speed and, you know, angle, and so that they don't leave the gravitational field. They just keep circling, don't they?
They can drift off.
And when they sent a thing to probe one of the distant planets, I don't know, Uranus or something like that, they sent it via other planets, and it used their gravitational field to sort of redirect. So they can be very precise. Yeah, because they know exactly where everything's going to be in a path. So they fire it into a direct gravitational force of pull of another planet, and that will divert it. And they know with maths, because the maths are so precise that they can actually aim for something that won't even be there right now. It'll be there in the future, you know, when it gets around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how they send probes, or that's how they sent one of the probes to, like, a distant planet. They used other planets to sort of bounce it off, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, see, crazy, that sort of thing blows my mind, that there are people out there. Like, I've just, this microphone that I'm using now, I bought this today because I left my one at home. And it took me a while to figure it out and set it up. And then I had to get producer Paul to, like, make sure it sounds good and do that. That took me an hour. These people work out, like you've just said, they work out where things are going to be in the future so that they can shoot things into space.
Yeah.
To bounce off the...
Well, that's how they, you know, that's how they get probes on Mars and stuff. They have to... They know where it's going to be, and they know the angle that it's sort of shot at. I don't know how much they can correct it on the way, but because there's no, like, wind in space, then they know that as long as nothing hits it, it's going to be going exactly where they send it. Because,
of course,
And they've got all the maths. They've got equations that just say exactly where it's going to be. You know, they can work it out with maths. But it won't be one person. It'll be one person that does the maths, or a bunch of people. But they won't know how to, you know, make a thruster or whatever. So you need an expert on thrusters. You've got experts in all these different areas. But when it comes together, then you've got, you know, that's how SpaceX happened, isn't it? It's just Elon Musk's got a lot of money, gathered a lot of experts together. And, you know, they've worked out how to. Yeah. So at some point, I think there'll be a Death Star. And will it be the moon or will it be a second moon? Obviously, they won't be able to send the whole thing at once because, you know, it'd be as big as a planet. They've got to send it bit by bit.
You build it? Yeah, you'd have to build it out there. You couldn't build it on Earth.
Yeah, you'd send it bit by bit. If they can shoot things with accuracy, they could shoot, you know, like a whole load of equipment out there, couldn't they? And they'll just be like, right, well, we need some more iron or whatever. Okay, shoot the iron out and it gets there and it's processed. And it'll just keep growing and growing until it's a planet, I reckon.
Go on.
I was just going to say, I mean, I hope no experts are listening who are just going to be like, right, actually, technically, that'll be impossible because all these reasons. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm sure there is a lot of things I'm not considering here.
But when you watch, I watched a documentary about when that first moon landing, and when they explained what they did, and they had to sort of, you can't just like fire the rocket towards the moon. It has to, like you just said, it has to go at a certain angle, a certain thing, and then they had to use like the orbit of the Earth first to build up speed, so they could just.
Yeah, and then like sometimes it circles slingshot. The moon as well, doesn't it? It's so like it might get to the moon and circle the moon first, and then land. And
yeah.
Then you got to slow it down because, you know, there's things. I think it was the Mars one. They said something like it was something like 40,000 miles an hour and it had to get down. <It's> like you got to get the speed down a bit. That's pretty fast. Now, that's, if you saw that go across the sky, you'd barely see it, wouldn't you? It'd be like a shooting star.
Yeah. 40,000 miles an hour.
Maybe that number's probably wrong, but it was a high number of thousands of miles per hour.
Something that you're not just going to just coast it in like a leaf.
Yeah.
Falling from a twig. That's really going to make a dent, isn't it?
Yeah, you got to slow that down. There'll be an expert in slowing down. You know, obviously there's going to be an expert.
There would be, though, wouldn't
there? Yeah, not just a parachute. There'll be some sort of device that uses the air sort of resistance. There's probably not much atmosphere on Mars, so it's probably I don't know how they test it because, you know, they've got to work out exactly how much, you know, what Mars is, the difference between Mars's atmosphere and ours and stuff like that. So I find that really fascinating. That's, to me, that's exciting, and I want to see more advances in that.
I find it all fascinating, like on a molecular level. Do you know what I mean? Like, they can work out how to move like the molecules around to make, like you just said about slowing down. They go, oh yeah, well, what you need is this thing, and then that will do. That'll just, like, it'll, I don't know. Now I'm just talking absolute bollocks. I'm, you know, but something like it turns the molecules a different way. So it does this and does that. And, you know, to work out that sort of thing, I find it fascinating to break it down to that, on that level.
Yeah. Well, you know, these, if you think about like physics engines as well, you know how they sort of they take physics and they emulate it, and you know, Unreal, there's a lot of game engines have physics engines, so you know, when bricks are smashed in a game, they're going to fall fairly accurately, and those things are quite you know, they build up materials and they will fall according to the gravity of the physics engine, and they try and replicate life, you know, reality on Earth with the physics, but there's only a certain amount of calculations a computer can do. So you can't. We've run into a bit of a sort of a bottleneck when it comes to doing the amount of calculations so you can emulate physics. That's with traditional computers. That's why, to me, quantum computers are really exciting, because it's not just better graphics, it's not just faster, it's the ability to calculate all these things quicker. And if they, when they, once they get them, then they can actually really emulate scientific molecules and things more realistically, because they can do all the calculations at once. They'd have to wait for, you know, it to process, it will happen in real time. Then once they can do that, then they'll be able to do some kind of, I don't know, it'll open up a whole world for scientific experimentation, because they can do it virtually and it will be as accurate as doing it in real life. They just need to build the simulations. And so that, to me, is really exciting, because then you could open up the world of scientific research to anyone who's got a computer. And then, you know what happens when everyone online is able to tinker with things, then crazy stuff. There'll be some 6 year old in like Venezuela or something who works something out that's just insane. And it's just they, given the opportunity, everyone on earth could do all these experiments virtually with these calculations. That I think there'll be a whole new era of scientific discovery just because of what quantum. So that's things that excite me. That's what I, when I scroll, you know, through your news things, I try and tell it to give me information, updates about artificial intelligence and quantum computers, because every day there's something new in that. And I'm going, this is exciting. They'll be able to simulate reality soon. Maybe this is a simulation, but that's, you know, once we've got fast enough computers to do that, we can simulate reality. And once we've got fast enough computers, then the AI will be much more capable, and then we'll start, you know, helping us with scientific, you know, developments, and then it'll start developing itself, and then we'll just be the monkeys. We'll be the monkeys, and they'll be the they'll be the next dominant species. And I welcome that. I'm looking forward to that.
But when you say it like that, because people do go, "Oh my god!" But they'll wipe us out. You go, "No, well, we're not going to be here forever anyway." This is just a moment in time, as you've seen with other species. At some point, humans won't be here anymore. And like you've just said, it'll probably be that. And there is this strange idea that we'll find answers. And I don't think we ever will. It's just an ongoing journey, isn't it? This ongoing journey of discovery, new things. It's unquenchable thirst for knowledge.
I think what we do, though, is we, at this point in time, we sit around and wait for another Einstein or Tesla or, you know, whoever to invent the next equation that helps us further technology. I just think at some point we don't need one. We just get artificial intelligence to take a look around the world and say, where are the gaps in our knowledge? You know, explain gravity to us. We don't really know exactly how it works yet, even though we've got a few ideas. There's something else going on there. AI explains it, and then we can build spaceships that can, you know, travel to the next star, and then whatever.
We can fuck that one up as well.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot. The thing is, though, there's a lot. I mean, you look at the sky, there's a lot of stars we can mess up. And I don't think we've messed up our star. We've just messed up the planet that, you know, the habitable planet.
We've definitely taken a shit in our own kitchen. You know,
I always like reading about just technological advancements. That's comfort for me. Some people get scared by it, they're not coming for me. You know, the AI is not attempted to hurt anyone yet. It's just aiding us in many ways. I'm not scared of the robotic overlords coming to kill us all.
Well, most of us are just slaves anyway. We always just agree with whoever's in charge. We go, yeah, all right then.
Yeah,
well, so just be the same.
Yeah, you know, just what's going to happen otherwise? You know, just we're just going to slowly die out. We are anyway. So
yeah, exactly.
Know, might as well at least be something. Also, who says we can't merge with them? You know, I want a big space, you know, just once my body's dead, take all the, you know, the brain out, stick it in a robotic suit, and I can fly around. And
that's what they're talking about, aren't they? They're saying that is when human beings, that is when we would get a chance to live forever, because they'll take us, they'll take the essence of us and put it into a computer program, and then you'll end up in that reality.
Yeah, well, that's why I like AI and quantum computers and all that, because we're getting close to that. But hurry up, because I might have, you know, 40 years more, if I live to the average age. It needs to happen in the next 40 years. Otherwise, they're not going to dig up old corpses, are they, and stick them in AI. I want to be in there. Not going to start. I mean, they'll dig up, like, you know, like Einstein and stuff, because if there's any like juice left, I'm sure there's a bit of DNA left in him, they can clone his brain, but yeah, there'll be a bit of, like, you know, that amber, you know, the fly that landed in the amber, and, there'll be a bit of that somewhere. They'll probably they probably kept his brain anyway. They probably kept it.
Probably.
But, you know, Tesla and Archimedes or whatever, all the ones, Isaac Newton. Just, I feel like that's, you know, going to be a very exclusive list of dead people to dig up and take their... So, you know, rather than trying to get on that list, I'd rather just be alive when the option might be 90 odd, and I'll be like, yeah, I'll take that. I saved up a little bit. Can I get that robotic body and keep my brain alive?
But that's the other thing as well, is that you want to be, I want to get it as soon as possible before I'm 90 and I don't, like, you know, a few of the neurons have dropped out, the connections have split. You know, I've got this 90 year old brain. That, you know,
yeah, yeah, they'll dial it back a bit. You know what they'll have? Yeah, you know how they can sort of rebuild cells with. They'll work out how to do it in their brain. I've got given. You know, I reckon that'll happen before the robotic merging. You know,
they get in there and they'll start. They'll get a soldering iron and start fusing the.
Yeah, yeah, something will go in there. You'll be able to take a pill and it'll be like replenish. Obviously, they're not going to give it to everyone because they don't want, you know, 100 billion people on the planet living forever. They'll give it to like the Queen. She's probably already testing it because
the Queen.
She's, you know, it's not it's not coincidence, is it, that royals live to about 98?
Yeah, there's got to be something they're doing.
Yeah, they've got something. It's not a coincidence that Zuckerberg looks like he's about 14. He's got something going on there.
Yeah, they're onto something, some kind of juice somewhere, some kind of vitamin injection.
Look at the photo of Elon Musk in 1999. He looks older than he does now. Actually, he's balding and he looks unhealthy. Now he's like robotic and his hairline's perfect, you know. They've got something. Yeah, yeah. They've got something, and I want it.
I love this shit. I see. This is the stuff I like. Talking about this stuff, it makes me laugh. And people do panic, and that's the thing all the time. People do. There is fear that drives everybody, which is why bad things happen, because they're scared. When you just look at it from this point of view, you go, yeah, fine, fucking bring it. If I end up being a brain in a tank.
Yeah, it's great. I want that. I mean, I've got a VR headset and it doesn't take much to convince me I'm in a different place. So if, you know, that's first, well, it's not first generation, but it can, we could consider it first generation technology compared to what's to come. Just an improvement on that is, you know, Half-Life Alyx. I don't know if you ever played that. You go into that world, you're pretty convinced you're in that world. It's a new experience, and that's just the start. They're going to get better and quicker and slimmer. It's going to be a pair of glasses, and then eventually it'll be contact, and then it'll be just in your brain. Shit. And you'll be in that world. And it wouldn't matter if you were living in, like, you know, a really shitty place, as long as you've got... They'll just... And people will be like, it'll never be as good as the real thing. But how do we know? Our brain just creates the real thing based on, you know, just whatever's going on in there. I like how I've got no technical terminology. Whatever's going on in there.
All the things.
Yeah, I know what I mean. And I don't need the words. I'm not educated. I know what I mean. But, you know, they've got... We just perceive the world as it is. And what makes you think we can't artificially create that? And, you know, what makes you say... And some people, even quite intelligent people, have suggested we might already be... You know, in a simulation. I don't believe that. It's too weird.
But, no.
I think a simulation is possible. And if that's the alternative to being dead forever, then give me the simulation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd rather that than that'd be it. Yeah. It's like the actor Nicholas Pinnock that we had on last year. And he was talking about acting. I said to him, how do you differentiate from the character to then going back to your own self? Like, is that stressful? Does it cause sort of mental health issues? And he said, yeah, because your brain doesn't know that you're acting. So all of those emotions that you're feeling that are real and in the moment, because you're in the zone and you're acting, your brain just thinks you are really going through that experience. So the anger and hatred and love, and, you know, so it's the same with what you've just said. Your brain sees this thing in front of you and goes, yeah, that's it. That's the truth.
Yeah. I always I just think, you know, acting's, it's kind of impressive how people can, actually, I couldn't cry on demand. A lot of actors can cry on demand. I just think, I can always get angry on demand. That's no problem for me. There's always a bit of anger knocking about in there that I can bring
just
out.
Just underneath the surface, yeah. just bubbling away.
It doesn't take much to bring that out, but, you know, I guess some actors are actors, though, and some are method actors, aren't they? So when they're method actors, they become the character, and then they just... It's just an extension of themselves. But yeah, that must be weird. I don't feel like I am. I don't fail to differentiate between me and the characters I play or create. But
no.
I don't think they're that different from me anyway. I think it's different when you write it. If someone else wrote it, then I'd have to get into someone else's mind. But because I wrote the character, then I know exactly what they're feeling, and I don't need to be instructed or, you know, think too hard about why they're in that situation. So playing a character for someone based on someone else's script as well, if you read someone's script and you try and do some voices or play a character, and it's very difficult, I find.
It's
generally why I do my own voices as well, is because in my head I just think there's no way, how am I going to find someone to do this the way I want it to be done.
Well, this is it, because you can hear it as you're writing the character, as you're creating it.
Yeah.
You can hear what it sounds like. And then to try and explain that to someone else, like with Devo or with Salad Fingers, you kind of go, this is what he sounds like. Can you, and yeah, you yeah. might have to do it yourself. Yeah.
See, Devo was Christian's character, but it's something we always did that voice to each other at school. That was it didn't take, you know, you didn't have to look far to find those people. They were all around us, like in school. They lived next door to us. They, when we used to play football, they would come down. They would hassle us when we were playing football. That was just reality. So for Christian to turn that into a character, it didn't take a lot of thought for him. He was, you know, it was always there. And there was no actual script for Devo. I'd sometimes throw some ideas in. Or sometimes we'd maybe come up with a phrase or a word that he could slip in there somehow. But in general, we'd just go to a place. We'd say, right, Devo is looking for some cigarettes. Go. And then we'd start filming and he would be scraping around. Then he'd just come up with a story on the spot. What? He would come up with a history. It was almost like he did become that character.
That's amazing.
And, you know,
when you're watching him trying to, when he says how he makes his money, like he smashes up people's garage doors and then goes around and says, "Oh, you've had your garage door smashed in.
Yeah,
I'll fix it for you." And trying to sell them broadband. I'll do you some broadband.
Yeah, that's how he does. That's how he talks as well. You know, not with that accent, but that's how his brain. You can see his brain coming up with ideas. You know, on the spot, and they just keep doubling over, and then another one appears. And when I was filming it with him, I felt like I was hanging around with Devo. I didn't feel like I was hanging around with my friend Christian. Right. I felt like I was hanging around with Devo, and I knew he wasn't going to hit me or start on me. But I didn't believe it that much. But I still felt like I was hanging around with, you know, a rough guy,
a
chavvy guy.
But we've all, like you say, those people have always been around. Like when I was a kid, they were. I remember you'd be over the park and you just see them appear on the horizon. You're like, oh no.
Yeah, there'd be loads of them.
You could kick off again.
You can see them from a distance. You know they're going to come down. You know, they're like 13, but they're smoking a cigarette. They'd be like, oh, you fucking. And they start, you know, just trying to get up in everyone's face, just trying to get a reaction so they can have a fight with someone.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, always handy to just befriend a few of them so you had them playing football with you, just so, you know, someone else can take a, you know, that was always a, that always seemed like a good idea. Just have a few rough kids around when you're playing football. They can be security.
That's a nice little life hack to finish on.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, we didn't, I remember at school, it was football on the field at school at dinner time. So like, yeah, there'd be a few sort of like rougher types, and that would be a layer of security for everyone else. No one messed with us when we played football at school.
I know what you mean. There was always one kid, and for some reason he liked me and he hated my mate. And so he always used to just bully the shit out of my mate. And yeah, it was always nice to me. And you're like, I don't get it.
That was the same with me. Yeah. There was a kid who lived on the corner. He was always friendly to me, but when my mates come around, he would always... I remember one time, this kid came up to us. It was just like walking towards us, acting really hard. And he had a hammer up his sleeve. And he was just like hitting the hammer on his hand, like saying he was going to hit us with the hammer. Remember that?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I often wonder what happened to those people.
I always look them up on Facebook and I'll just be like, oh, great, they've got four kids. Great. Great. Let me just look up the kid, the smart kid from school. Oh, right. No, he's not on Facebook. I can't find out what he's doing, but I can see that all the worst kids have got multiple children of their own now. So they're multiplying. That's great.
Good. That's what we need. More mad cunts running
around. Yeah, yeah.
David, thank you so much for joining me on this. I really appreciate it. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Can we find you online? Or
yeah, you can find me online. You can find me online. Just search for Sourd Fingers. Yeah.
Yes.
You mean as in find me, like I'm running around in the online space, like you can grab me. I don't know about that, but
in your reality, in your virtual reality.
Yeah, I mean, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter and all those places. Just, it's David Firth and it's usually Salad Fingers. So,
Brilliant. I bought the Salad Fingers plush toy.
Oh, yeah. So just, nice one.
I love it.
Cheers. Yeah, it's great, man. Those are kind of a fun item and they've done really well. I actually gave one to the local. There's a bakery that I go to today, and I gave them. They kept them commenting that they wanted a plush toy, so I gave them one today, and they sat it on the little shelf, and I got a free sandwich for that, and
you
got to be friendly with the local bakeries. It's always good to have a good relationship with your local bakery, I found.
That's fucking great. Yeah, I think that's a great little life lesson. Yeah, take that with you, everybody. Just befriend your local baker.
Yeah, as long as it's not Greg's, they don't give a shit. Like,
no, they give no. They don't need Salad Fingers.
Independent. No, they're not allowed to think. Yeah, you just imagine if you went into Greg's with a Salad Fingers toy, they'd be looking around like, is someone senior? Can someone take care of this? I don't know. I'm not allowed an opinion. I'm not even allowed to play my own music. Now, you got to go in the local places where they're allowed their own opinions.
That's it. Yeah, I love that. It's nice when people come to my place and they go, Salad Fingers. They go, yeah. They go, where the fuck did you get that? I was online.
Yeah. And it's not been bootlegged yet, like all the other Salad Fingers merch. So buy it before it
is. Really?
Yeah, I think it's too hard to make one of those like on the cheap. They can print a T-shirt. Anyone can print a T-shirt out, but it takes quite a bit of effort to make a plush toy.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. It looks shit as well if they did that. My God.
Yeah. It
looked even worse.
Like one of them ones you win at the fairground or something, one of those pieces of crap.
Like a blue Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this has been great. Right. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Insane in the membrane.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.